The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, nothing changes if nothing changes.
I like
that. So we have to make things change, right?
Absolutely right. Zanati, what do you think?
Definitely.
It's awesome that. I like that a lot. All right, and speaking about COVID, what is the latest in Israel? What's happening with the Corona Cabinet?
Well, we had this Corona Cabinet meeting yesterday. It went on for 4 hours, and this was already the second coronavirus cabinet meeting this week, because the earlier meeting that took place on Monday ended without any decisions being taken because there was so much disagreement within the committee. What's interesting from yesterday is that the new coronavirus commissioner, Professor Ronnie Gumzu, seems to have got his way. Because Prime Minister Netanyahu, along with the security forces, the representatives of the security and the National Security Council in particular, Meir Ben Shabbat, the two of them were very much in favor of going to a full lockdown situation. Professor Gumzu, together with Health Minister Yuli Edelstein, were on the other side of the coin, favoring a more open approach to try somehow to cope with corona without going to a lockdown. They were the ones who prevailed on this particular occasion. So Professor Gumzu got his way, and the following major decisions were made at yesterday's meeting, which have been adopted at least for the next few weeks, and then obviously it will be subject to review then. First of all, this whole idea of restricting businesses over the weekend has been cancelled. Professor Gumzu thought it was a quite ridiculous idea that on some days of the week we can have shops open while on other days of the week not. I think that there was an issue that people felt that on weekends there was more congregating around the commercial areas. And so that was the reason why they tried to close down weekend shops and things like that. That's now been cancelled. Additionally, quite interestingly, public playgrounds are reopened. So whereas most municipalities had to cordon off the children's playgrounds, which are outside in the street in public areas, now those are going to be reopened, and children and I guess their parents as well will be allowed to revisit those playgrounds and make use of them. The other restrictions that have been in place up until now will continue to be in place, so no change to those. But from the 1st of September, this idea of the traffic light plan for individual municipalities and local authorities will be strictly implemented, red, green, and orange, according to the state of morbidity in that particular location. So every region of Israel, every municipal area, every city will be treated differently according to what's going on in that particular city, and that's going to be implemented quite strictly from the 1st of September. Interestingly, they are planning, there was an intention issued to reopen air traffic in the second half of August already. So within the next couple of weeks that apparently air traffic will be reopened in Israel. There is no real detail of exactly how that's going to work, but that's apparently the intention. What Professor Gumzu did say is that there has been no example in the world of a country that has the morbidity that Israel is currently suffering, which has not succeeded in overcoming the problem without a full lockdown. He's acknowledged that the only way that this has been successful in other parts of the world, what we're going through right now, is by a full lockdown. And yet, he doesn't want to go to a full lockdown. He wants to give it another 2 weeks to see if by the beginning of September, things can be brought under control. And if not, he will then be forced. He's already admitted that there will then be no choice but to go to a much fuller lockdown. And of course, it's all connected to economic activity. People are concerned about the economic impact that full lockdown will have, had on the economy. And so he's really doing whatever he can to somehow bring a different way of dealing with things into our society, and to somehow handle what we're going through without a full lockdown. And if he's successful, that'll be just an amazing achievement. We all want him to succeed. We really do. And we all want this to be a great model that potentially other countries can adopt in the future. But it requires a lot of discipline and people to toe the line. Not, for example, what happened yesterday in Jerusalem when there was this massive bells wedding that went ahead, apparently thousands of people attending. The grandson of the leader of the bells, Hasidic sect, got married. And some video footage has come out, some pictures have come out showing thousands of people attending against the police instructions. And, of course, everybody was being searched to make sure that they didn't have cameras on them so that none of the information could leak out. But the Bell sect, unfortunately, has not been cooperative. They have not shown that they understand the severity of this problem. And I sincerely hope that we don't suffer a massive outbreak in another 2 or 3 weeks as a result of this massive gathering of people, which really goes against every single rule imaginable under the current circumstances.
Indeed, it's just so frightening because we just can't figure it. I mean, I guess we can figure it out. We do know what we need to do. We just actually need to do it. What is really frightening is the situation in Beirut. So in the aftermath of the Beirut explosion, thoughts have turned to the possibility of such a disaster happening in Israel. So interesting, because I started to hear that conversation here around South Africa as well. People saying, well, hold on, what are our safety standards at the port? Are we being careful around the sort of thing. I do know that having been in the commodity trade, these types of products are very well managed generally here in South Africa in terms of permits for transport, storage, etc. But it is a real concern. What are the thoughts around Israel?
Well, I mean, first of all, the thoughts are still with the people in Beirut and in Lebanon in general. Tel Aviv municipality lit up its municipal building with a flag of Lebanon, who would imagine, in the middle of Tel Aviv last night, as a sign of solidarity with the people in Beirut and the suffering that's going on there right now. Of course, a lot of public officials are being held accountable, many resignations. There's a lot of drama, not only at the level of trying to mop up those people who've been killed, those people who've been injured, people being left homeless, the humanitarian disaster that's going on in Beirut, but also there's a lot of questioning about how this could have been allowed to happen, to what extent were people negligent and not taking care of what really should have been easily taken care of. And of course, as you rightly say, thoughts have now turned to what could happen in Israel. And of course, those people who visited Israel perhaps 20 or 30 years ago might even recall that there used to be these huge oil storage tanks right in between Ramat HaSharon and Tel Aviv, at the huge junction, which everybody used to drive past when traveling out of Tel Aviv towards the north. Those oil storage tanks have now been removed, thankfully, and have dissipated a massive threat, a massive danger that they posed while they were stored there within such a huge built-up area with so many people living around. But the Haifa Bay area, unfortunately, still represents a major threat where this is concerned. And the latest estimations are that there's something like 800 hazardous materials that are stored within the Haifa Bay area, in more than 1,000 locations around Haifa. And there have been even before today, there's been a lot of attention drawn to the danger that these hazardous materials bring to the people living around Haifa, not only in terms of a potential disaster if they were to explode, but for the longest time, people in Haifa have been complaining about the massive pollution that comes out of the industrial area and the whole port area because of these hazardous materials and because of some of the production facilities that are within that area. So this has now received a new focus because of what's happened in Beirut. And of course, the Ministry of Environmental Protection have already published comments regarding a survey that was done of the dangers that present themselves in the Haifa Bay area. I think that this event in Beirut is really going to accelerate not only the attention that's being drawn to those dangers, but also the fact that a lot of that production and a lot of that storage facility really needs to be moved away from the Haifa Bay area out to areas which potentially are much less dangerous and much less hazardous to people living in the area.
Yeah, quite a story. And if any good does come out of this terrible tragedy, maybe it's countries around the world will do exactly what Israel is doing, and that is just to have a look at the safety protocols to try and avoid this story. And has there been any feedback on Israel's offer of assistance to those in suffering in Beirut?
Still no official feedback on Israel's offer. I mean, a number of doctors have come out saying that it would be a real tragedy if people in Lebanon died unnecessarily as a result of the Lebanese government's potential resistance to wanting to take up on the offers that have been provided by Israel. I think, in all honesty, that the Lebanese government is a little paralyzed at the moment, because they just have no idea really which way to turn, whether they should be taking up offers of people around the world, whose offers they should accept, because there have been a number of offers of assistance from various locations. I think that there seems to be some sort of a paralysis at the moment within Lebanon. Some of the officials have had to resign because of this disaster. So I think slowly but surely they'll have to regain their feet. Someone will have to take control and have to make decisions about whose help will be required, will be taken up on, and how that's going to happen. So at the moment, unfortunately, really nothing to speak of in terms of Israel's offer of assistance.
Not really great news around Israel's economy. It's expected to shrink by 7% during 2020. Is action being taken to try and mitigate this dramatic impact of the COVID-19 crisis?
Well, I think that, you know, Professor Gamzu, in terms of the story that we discussed earlier, I think he's the guy who's really trying to drive this. I think that his main consideration is exactly this issue. How could the economy shrink by 7% within 1 year? It's just unfathomable. And it hasn't happened for 20 or 30 years, maybe more. I don't know when the last time was that such a huge contraction in the economy took place. In fact, the last time that there was even any recession in the Israeli economy, you have to look back to 2008, 2009, when economic growth just dipped slightly below zero. But ever since then, over the last 12 years, we've had constant economic growth ranging between 2 to 4 to 5% in that sort of order of magnitude, but every year constant economic growth. And yet this year suddenly we are going to have this massive contraction. 7% is an estimate. Some people are thinking it might be closer to 5%. The sad thing is that we really came from a situation where the economy was growing so well over an extended period of time. We had almost zero unemployment. The unemployment rate by the end of 2020 is expected to stand at something like 15%, which is so dramatic in comparison to what it was just before the coronavirus issue got hold of the economy. There are some predictions about what might happen in next year, 2021, that there might be some growth. But overall, it's expected that the economy is going to shrink, and that we will not be able to return to pre-pandemic levels at least until 2023 and perhaps even beyond that. So this is all very, very dramatic for the Israeli economy. And one can therefore understand why Professor Gamzu is being so insistent upon trying to keep economic activity going, at least to some extent, even if it's very, very limited, in order to somehow get over this particular issue.
What's so difficult about this is economists are expected to be virologists, and virologists are expected to be economists. And we've seen this more than ever during this pandemic, is how everything is just so interlinked, as well as, of course, politics. It becomes a very difficult road to navigate, doesn't it?
Not only a difficult road to navigate, Howard, but also we've never had something like this before that we can really draw on experience and say we know that the last time this happened or when something similar to this happened, this is what we did and this is what the outcome was, and therefore we can draw some lessons and try to implement good policies, things that worked in the past, which could potentially work again. There's absolutely no experience to draw upon whatsoever, and I think that this is what's making it so difficult. Everybody's really guessing. You've got so many different views, and we saw it yesterday in the coronavirus cabinet, where everybody comes with a slightly different view, and nobody's right and nobody's wrong, because we really have no idea. It's all kind of a guessing game, and some people obviously will turn out to be right and some will turn out to be wrong, but by that stage, unfortunately, it'll be too late. Whatever damage has been, will have been done by then. You know, that there's no way of unfortunately avoiding doing damage along the way, because we simply have no idea what the next step should be.
Absolutely right, Anthony Rauch. This is where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Hope you have a fantastic, fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom. And of course, we will catch you on Monday morning.